We are now starting the afternoon session. I hope you are all well fed and wide awake. Two connections with this morning. I just went through my notes and realised I've written much too much on email. And it's quite funny, a lot of repetition. We did work together to get the sessions, and I thought we'd solve that and have much too much on email. And secondly, I panicked about that, so I needed to find a place to write during lunch, which was very noisy. If any of you saw me, I stood up here and was writing away, and I scribbled all over my notes, more literacy practices around things. Okay, first a question, again, which relates to this morning a lot. You've already answered this question. What annoys you about work? Maybe if you each would maybe write down one thing, or if you really want to, you can write down 20 or 30 things. What annoys you about work? And I'll try and keep you quiet. And this may be a different question. What annoys you about technology? Maybe one from each person. The great thing about this research project is we've really enjoyed doing it, because the people who do agree to get involved really enjoy being interviewed, and they find it a good space to just let themselves go. Our research question, one of our research questions, to remind you, how are digital communication technologies shaping academics' writing practices? And we, as I said, we're at three universities looking at these three disciplines. One little point I wanted to add from this morning was, I thought that straightforward disciplines, departments, we'll go into departments. And then there's such a mismatch across different universities. There's, you know, long discussions about someone in the history department saying, I'm not a historian, I'm something else, and the other way around, to find historians in other departments. And there was not a close map of disciplines and departments, and in each of the three universities it was spread out quite differently, and that has been a difficult thing to deal with when we're trying to get it going. Very quick mention of an earlier study, how we all started out on this. In 2009, interviews with just 9 academics in social sciences and humanities at our own university. Even not very long ago, this was before the impact of gender in England, and there seemed to be far fewer changes in academic lives. It was then that we came across the very wide range of types of writing, and in addition to scholarly writing, people talked about speeches for local community organisations, writing for print media such as newspapers, consultancy work for charities, contract research, policy papers for institutions and government, commissioned pieces for magazines, popular histories, dictionaries, writing for practitioners and for the general reader. And this just kept going on, and we've taken it up in the current research. No real mention of blogs and tweets back then. We also noticed that people mentioned the role of technologies extensively, and that's what we wanted to follow up. And people had strong likes and hates. We sort of covered this so far already. I think we've had this a bit this morning. What has been the changes in tools and resources in the academic workplace? Some sort of virtual learning environment, facilitating distance and blended learning and collaborations, and a shift from then, when it was completely optional whether you were involved in this, and some people liked it for, especially in groups, planning courses, and other people could just keep away from it. In 2009, Lancaster had its own lovely, it was called, its own VLE called Lancaster University VLE, and we knew that was all superior to anything else, like little Moodle. And then Moodle swept in, and it's now compulsory, general access of other staff to it. Staff can see how much feedback tutors make. It can be measured, it can be complained about, it can be get discussed. So a lot of things that were private are now, the relationship between the teacher and the student is now more public and available and managerial. Whole set of file sharing and other tools, providing new affordances for collaborative work. Video conferencing has come in. The way in which the library's whole role, what it's like physically, in terms of what happens in the spaces and talking and eating in libraries, but also the online resources, and how libraries have changed their role as to as stakeholders in knowledge production, and are often, say, over the postgraduate student level, are putting on a lot of courses. So they're providing courses, training courses, often in research methodology and things like that, and all the different stakeholders taking up different positions. Everyday devices have been brought into work, so smartphones and things like iPads often started in everyday life and get used in academic life. We've seen a shift in these sort of things in the 2 years of our project. Dropbox, WhatsApp, Facebook, Skype being used more and more, and again started quite often in family situations where Skype would be used, then optionally in the workplace, and now often compulsorily in the workplace, holding a PhD viva through Skype or something like that, or collaborative research. And I think we're in the middle of the tweeting and blogging getting recognised. And we've made the point already, some people really into it, some people not, and how is it being valued? And certainly our university is looking at ways of valuing and demanding that people tweet about how wonderful our department is and things like that. So that is change. I think that's something we're in the middle of it. Point is, every aspect of academic practice is changing. It was Martin Weller in his book The Digital Scholar who took the example of writing a book in 2004 and writing another one in 2010 and looks at how every aspect of the writing the book changed. We would apply this to other aspects, writing and submitting a paper, preparing and carrying out and evaluating teaching, impact work, student records, all are part of what the digital scholar is facing. Want to build up a picture of what's going on in terms of academic writing, and the wide range of digital tools and platforms used in writing. We've mentioned lots of examples so far, but how for each person there is a coherent set of things going on. So Diane writes in Word, uses Skype often, and screen shares documents, use shared Dropbox for version control. She's got a whole way of doing things, and is more, that's what I saw myself in this, more social science-y probably. Gareth, mathematician, not only do mathematicians use blackboards and chalk, which no other discipline seems to, their own word-like programs, LaTeX, sending documents back and forth using this program for math, mathematical symbols, uses email, but not much, as little as possible of the VLE. Rebecca, who we came across in the pen portraits, has a digital camera which has revolutionised her collection of archival material. She still handwrite notes about manuscripts. And remember, if you go into an archive, if you go into the British Library along the road, you can only take a pencil in, and that changes what people are using. Okay, so we each person seems to have a set of things that they're doing, and to bring in the liking and hating, in case you're not into the notion of stance taking and affect, stance is useful as it brings together a wide range of work on people's attitudes and positioning in relation to what they're referring to. So it's stance is broadly defined as taking up a position with respect to the form or content of one's utterances, and we're talking about affective stance, two major kinds of stance, the epistemic, I believe, I think, but, and in addition, the affective, I like or not. And this just sort of came up all over the place. Charles, yeah. I hate Skype. It's a simplistic thing, the dislocation between eye and contact. And he talks about meeting face to face, spending the day with people, having coffee breaks, and dividing up work tasks. We'll come back to him later on, but he's puts himself over as a social person, a sociable social person, and doesn't like aspects, which I think, yeah, okay, that's what he does. Doesn't matter what I think. I wanted to talk a bit about email, but I think it's mostly been said so far. People often mentioned it in passing when discussing other topics. We didn't go in and say, what do you think about email? They'd be talking about something else, and it was a topic, again and again, they wanted to talk about. It represents most aspects of being an academic, so lots of struggling to keep up with it, doing things in different ways, and we're exploring people's individual uses on that. And crucially, it's not one thing. But I won't say any more about it yet. I'd like to give another example, the example of PowerPoint. The link to this, how I got into this, I was looking at tips for great presentations in PowerPoint. And apart from the large number of contradictions I'd find in there, there are also a lot of places that said, PowerPoint is evil, PowerPoint should be banned, you could just has terrible, you just do bullet points and that's the worst thing in the world. So quite a bit of hostility from this. There's a sense in which everyone does their individual thing, and to give you a bit about our autoethnography, the five of us are doing presentations today, and you may have noticed that there are some differences between how we present. And we were talking about this last night. I wanted us all to have the same design, and preferably my own design, but I was overruled, and we found many areas where we disagreed. The role of images, the amount of text allowed on a slide, minimum font size, purpose of the colours, purpose of the text, what do we do with quotes? We went on and on like this, and in the end we just said, oh, we do what we want. And if you look closely, you'll see we've done quite different things. And there's even brighter things to come in the next one, next talk. People had a certain respect for PowerPoint in our study, the other people besides researching ourselves. People didn't love or hate PowerPoint. They had a certain respect for it, and they usually saw it as the default software for a lecture or conference paper. There was at least one person who never used it, and was quite vocal on that. But in general, it was a practical thing. People used it in different ways, especially, which I hadn't thought about before, distinguishing presenting conference papers from giving lectures. These were quite different things where they had a different range of practices. When lecturing, most people used some sort of notes, like me now, as support. These could be actual words on the PowerPoints, or they could be separate notes. Several people had a script of some sort which they read or had partly memorized. This was especially true for conference papers, and quite often trying to get it to appear to be spontaneous when reading it out, which is fine. That's what people do on TV. They often have a script and make out And this was especially true for conference papers. Second point, Don prepared a complete written paper for any conference presentation. PowerPoints were for images for him, not text. He'd have roughly 12 slides for a 40-minute paper, and he's talked about himself not being particularly good at talking from slides. Like others, he'd go through the paper several times before the actual presentation to get more fluent at reading and want to make it sound as if it wasn't being read. A few actually memorised the whole script, turning it into a different sort of performance. Distinguishing it from teaching, he said he'd ad-lib more in teaching and wanted to give the impression of it not being a text. Teaching PowerPoints tended to be added to year on year, incrementally. You start with an existing structure and change it, and often that was different for conferences. Number four, people's practices had changed over time in the direction of moving from reading a script to having less reliance on it. Rebecca explained how her foundation point for a lecture used to be a script. You write out a script and then turn it into a PowerPoint. But now her starting point was a PowerPoint presentation and the text was in her head. So people provided insights into the creating of texts for presentation and publication, and all going for the thing at the end, like the five of us all doing a presentation, people taking some different routes into that. People might not take up new changes to sites like Word if they had existing ways which worked well for them. And again, someone mentioned that this morning in the question. The stimulus for changing practices was often collaborating with colleagues over shared teaching point or joint conference paper, looking over someone's shoulder in their office. You ask someone, how many messages do you have in your phone box? In your inbox. And I won't ask you now because we'll have a long discussion about it. And I can... Is it true of you? You clear it every day?
I aim to clear
okay,
it every
that's
day.
Okay, people aim to clear it every day. People have a number of... Or get clear all the... Or make sure they look at the read ones. Some people colour code them and then ignore half of the colours and things like that. People are doing such different things, and you tend to see it when you go into someone else's office and ask them something, they look it up and say, oh wow, you've got 3,433 messages in your inbox. And they say, oh, yes, that doesn't everyone. It's like this thing about how many slides for a 50-minute lecture. There isn't an answer to that because people do quite different things with slides. So that's a little different from just talking about emails. The negative affect, they're not like it was the always on problem that people came up with. Implicit expectation of being constantly in contact using digital devices and feeling that they had more responsibility for what students were up to. It used to be one lecture, one seminar, close the door till the next Monday. People, you knew you had done your duty when you'd done two things. Now you've never done your duty, and on-campus students get blended learning. They get face-to-face. They also tend to have access to the lecturer through email. Did we mention the French law that was been recently passed where people are not expected to answer emails outside their work time? In France, a much greater consciousness of the workplace and workplace regulation. Okay, and I think we've probably done this. We're always expected to be on duty 24 hours a day. Every time you sit down and do some writing, the email comes in that takes you away from it. And Charles, this is Charles again. He was very sociable. Last thing I do at night is checking my emails. The first thing I do in the morning is check my emails. I think we've got to realise that being on his emails is an act of sociability. It's not the opposite. And quite often people say, oh, someone's on their phone. Why aren't they talking to people? They are talking to people, and Charles is talking to people. Strategies for managing these challenges. We've been holding writing retreats for academics of the people we interviewed, and this has been very popular. and all levels of academics, people starting out, professors, all the lot were involved in it and enjoyed them. One of our rules was people had to turn their phones off and not go in on the internet during the sessions. And at the end, when we evaluated, quite a few people saw this as being the best thing they'd learned, that they were able to turn off their phone, and they were going to do that in their lives in the future. We don't know if this happened. We could go back and ask. But it gave them the space to realise that they could do these things, that you can say, right, I'm going to work for an hour and a half, and I don't... Someone mentioned having so many machines around, and this common thing of having the phone there where you look at your emails while you're writing, which is how I often am. But, you know, I don't have to do it. I could turn it off. Okay. People wanted to know positive things we had from our research, not just the negative things. I think Karen mentioned this morning, collaboration facilitated by digital tools was a large international collaborative bid, 13 universities, 6 countries. It did involve face-to-face meetings as well as the digital, and people felt that collaboration was facilitated by the technology, and it was also a speeding up. How long did this take?
It took about 20 days from being invited into the bid to the bid deadline.
It's amazing, yeah, 20 days. And this sort of thing that you'd allow sort of 6 months for. I'm going to work with someone I've never worked with before, but I'd better get to know them. Those sort of things. Then we also did have conflicted stance. In one part of an interview, someone says, I love something. In another part, they say they hate it. And we then look more closely at that. I didn't say how we collected this data. This was mainly from the interviews part of the study, and I always make this shape when I talk about the hermeneutic unit. If you know Atlas TI, you'll know that it's something called the hermeneutic unit, but I think of a thing like this. I'm not sure why I think that. So in all the interviews, being able to go through all the interviews searching, partly we had codings related to affect, and partly we did search individual words like and hate and prefer and things like that. So that's where this all came from. So people could love something at one point and hate it at the other. Or actually, I think with the email, I do have problems with it, but it's very, very useful, and it does get things done, and I can do a lot. So this sort of conflicted stance. And lastly, to summarise, some things about new technologies. New technologies for scholars, they can encourage new forms of collaboration. They can encourage mobility, of being able to work on the train and things like that. They reflect individual histories. We need to look at individuals acting. The same aim, do the presentation, the different ways through it. A point, often the digital world, the digital revolution, is assumed to be the only thing going on. And I think the work on time and space and managerialism and the other things show that the digital changes need to be discussed in the context of other social changes. And in terms of the tensions, there are general tensions within life about the general characteristics for digital media, greater freedoms, new collaborations, the attention paid to celebrity culture. And we can see that these are acted out within academia, but there's always two sides to it. So we have the international collaborations with interdisciplinarity and mixed methods encouraged. This goes totally against the good research ref research profile, where often interdisciplinarity is shunned and single methodologies are often encouraged. With the VLE, where we saw more control and compulsion than earlier studies, we now have the university, and it means that staff and other people have access to what we have access to, and there can be monitoring of all areas of assessment, and universities trying to control much more what people's websites are like, and maybe what's going on in blogs and Twitter.